Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me is, I want to say Patrick?
It's Pete.
I'm pretty sure it's Patrick. Anyway, hello?
Are you willing to grant me immunity? The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 205, Rock Bottom, is sponsored by Imaginary Shopping Mall. Open anytime people start talking about computers.
Well, Pete, here we are continuing to podcast Runaways, our last podcast of the year, a year that has seen more podcasting than we have ever done before in the history of Fantastic Geek. Give or take our 158th or so podcast, and glad to be wrapping things up, at least for the year, with Runaways, though the adventure, of course, continues later in the week with, wait for it, more Runaways.
More Runaways. We've got Star Trek Discovery, the fourth and final short trek coming to you later this week on Thursday, January 3rd. We'll have God Friended Me returning on Sunday, January 6th, so a week from today, Matt. But what do you say we get to that Runaways recap?
Dive on into it, Pete.
Topher spins Molly a tale about growing up in the suburbs with his coyote parents until he ran away. Nico has shown the group Topher's vial, but he hasn't asked about her staff, One Direction's metal gloves, or the dinosaur. Molly doesn't want him to leave. He claims to have found a terrarium in a garbage can downtown containing glowing rocks. When he picked them up, he felt incredible and his eyes glowed. He ground them up and stretched them out until now. What's in the vial is all that remains of the only thing that makes his life bearable. Nico gives it back. Alex questions how the same glowing rocks that gave Molly her powers would have wound up in the garbage. Gert just wants to know what happened to the lizard, and her guard dog is watching Topher. Once the group splits up, Topher gets Molly to show him where the rocks came from at the dig site. Jonah and Carolina reach the bottom of the hole. She doesn't know what she is, despite having read the Book of Gaborim 1,000 times. Jonah tells her to stick her hand in a crevasse, which activates his spaceship. But she's never heard about one crashing because there would be security and everyone would know. But there were no witnesses. His arrival predates recorded history, since he understands time a little differently than humans. She will too. She's an alien, and so are they. Jonah ejected right before impact, but they have been trapped in the ship beneath South Central Los Angeles this whole time. But soon they'll be free. Jonah introduces Carolina to her brother. Topher finds Gert obsessively, compulsively brushing her teeth. He tells her he can get his hands on prescription drugs to take the edge off, which she is interested in. After all, the sister of his sister is his sister. Carolina goes to Alex's room and starts doing something to his computer when Nico almost catches her and Alex awakens. She says she's just restless to help. At Pride HQ, Eiffel refuses to delete her selfie with Chase after 15,000 likes and a repost by Little Yachty, whoever that is. And she's verified now. She won't be intimidated and brought her legal team. They just want to know about their children, though. She asks for immunity, and the Yorkses grant it, before she tells them she gave Chase her master key so Alvin could get a computer. His name is Alex, but she's pretty sure it's not, because when people start talking about computers, she likes to go imaginary shopping. Francis and Aura bring Frank to Jonah's office. They understand their place, but Jonah's not sure Frank understands his. Jonah shows him Victor and reviews that the church teaches there is no death. All the energy that exists, that shall ever exist, was created with the birth of the universe. It cannot be destroyed, only converted. Like Leslie before, Jonah asks Frank to bring him a runaway to put in his box or not come back. At Pride, Jeffrey tells them Alex got an A+ in ethical hacking with that computer that costs $100,000. They're concerned about the damage he can do with it. The Yorkses reveal they saw Jonah and Carolina at the dig site. Robert says he is going to take care of Jonah because he has the advantage of being underestimated. He's been working on something he won't disclose. Tina seems concerned about what he's doing as Amy's father. Tina advises they all change their passwords on their Wiz devices. Topher is missing, and a cursing Molly says they drove him away. He's taken the info from Alex's bulletin board about the dig site to get his rocks on. They head out to the site. At the dig site, Topher uses the powder and breaks in, sifting through a truckload of sand to find several glowing rocks and stuffs them into his backpack. A construction worker witnesses him doing it. Leslie goes to see Jonah and asks how he could see Carolina and not tell her. He tells her he's been opening up to her about everything. She regrets putting the bracelet on Carolina in the first place and wants to know who he really is and what his plans are for her daughter. The kids arrive at the dig site to find first responders digging the construction worker who saw Topher out, and then see him drop his stolen rocks in the street before he jacks a car and they chase him. Carolina voices concern into how deep he got into the hole. Chase worries if Topher is caught, he'll give them up. Molly wants to follow him, but Gert only agreed to drive so she could stay in the car. Janet discovers Jonah's ship has an anti-gravity engine. A harried and humorous pursuit sees the runaways pull up to a residential address with a front door already laying in the yard. Inside, Topher begs his parents, who are different than the ones depicted in the story, to Molly, to come home. According to his nurse sister, their father cannot walk because of what Topher did to him, but he promises to be different this time. The runaways enter the modest house and attempt to talk a distraught Topher down, something made increasingly difficult by the bag full of rocks on his back. His mother says he's never been the same since the accident at a lab turned him into some kind of monster. An explosion at Goodman University, where Topher worked as a custodian, saw Molly's parents die. His sister says he lies about everything and steals. Chase points out the story Topher told them would make him 8 at the time of the explosion at the geosciences lab. Topher shoves his sister, and Molly makes her eyes glow. As Gert waits in the car outside, she sees Molly thrown into the front yard. The whole neighborhood looks on as Molly tries to subdue him. Nico blasts him into a dumpster, which he hurls back at her. Chase deflects it with his fistagon, sending it toward Gert in the car, which Topher pushes out of the way. Molly drags him out from under the dumpster, but he's badly bleeding as sirens close in. They have to leave, and his sister says she will help Topher. They must bury the rocks someplace no one will find them. Topher loses consciousness as they depart. Frank watches people get off buses and welcomed at the Gaborim Center when Leslie surprises him, and he tells her what Jonah has demanded of him. He asks how she ever did it. Jonah explained it to her that all life consumes other life to survive, but Frank points out they're not cannibals. She tells him Jonah's been seeing Carolina and that Frank is a great parent. He has faith in Carolina, though, and he's not selecting a sacrifice. They lock hands. Janet enters Victor's memory, where he is tortured with Philly cheesesteaks without Cheese Whiz. DeWiz is the whole thing. I'm going to forget he said that last part. She redirects him from processed cheese to gravitational wave engines and ways to destroy them, because they now exist and will be used to destroy California. A smiling Janet exits the memory, and a happy Victor goes to work. After a quiet car ride home, Molly confronts Nico about helping Topher. She tells her she sounds exactly like her mother. Robert pours Jonah's Macallan over ice as he returns to his office. He got in by subverting all the wizard tech the Deans implemented. As Robert confronts Jonah about killing Amy, he has another coughing fit, collapsing, and starting to get increasingly flaky. Robert analyzes Carolina's inhibitor bracelet and has found a way to make Jonah really ill. After Robert stomps Jonah's face, Francis and Aura save the day and go ultra. Carolina goes to see Nico and reminds her Molly is only 14. Nico admits Molly's not completely wrong either. Carolina speaks to the power of connection with family, but Nico's not scared of her light. Alex and Chase see the light emanating from the room and are happy for them. Alex asks about he and Gert. The computer is Alex's girlfriend now. Chase can relate because of his first lacrosse stick, what with its hand-strung pocket and taped shaft. Alex plans to use the computer to take down the dig site after all. Gert goes to see Molly and tells her how proud she is that Molly saw Topher as another human being today. She's not a kid anymore. Molly just wanted family. Gert tells her everyone in the house is her family and loves her unconditionally. Gert says goodbye to Old Lace and leaves. Carolina also sneaks out. A female neighbor who saw Molly and Topher fight sketches and spray paints a mural of a girl with lit up eyes on a wall under cover of night. Jonah dumps Robert in the secret antechamber at Pride HQ, and Tina rushes to his side. Carolina catches her mother going to her car and wants to know the truth about her father. A hospital curtain is pulled back to reveal Gert, who a nurse tells her parents will be picking up in a little while.
Well, Pete, let's talk villains of this episode. And I think after the story not having us be completely clear as to Topher's intent, clearly he's a villain in this episode.
I mean, while he is a circumstantial addict of the rock he first picked up after the explosion at the same lab where Molly gained her powers, there is a pattern. He's violent. He's a liar, whether it's pathological or, you know, out of his need to reacquire these rocks and get more for his substance that he puts on his wrist. But, you know, it all comes back literally to harm him. And the last we've seen of him to this point, bloodied, his sister caring for him, but, you know, nice misdirect at the end of the episode. We obviously think it's going to be Topher behind the curtain, and instead it's Gert having given up on running away, at least temporarily.
If Topher and his situation is meant to be a metaphor for addiction to, you know, very, very dangerous drugs, then I think he deserves a certain level of sympathy. And I think that you've addressed that, Pete. If we want to treat it, though, completely from the point of view of crazy space rocks give him weirdo powers and make him hurt people or help facilitate him hurt people, then I think the blame very clearly can be placed on his feet. You know, get over that addiction to weirdo space rocks. You've hurt right. family members. Again, I don't want to be unsympathetic to those with, you know, with true addiction, but I think the story is giving us a bit of an out here. You know, like, don't put your dad in the wheelchair seems like a good, you know, a good rule to live by. And when you've gone that far, that's the time to maybe reassess your relationship with this substance.
You could see where the storyline is potentially, you know, influenced by the opioid crisis, that somebody would be given pain medication for a real and true reason and then wind up continuing to use opioids long after they no longer have the pain. There's this physical and emotional addiction as well. And then you look at how emotionally, you know, just under the absolute influence he is to these rocks, and violently so. So I think very, very carefully considered on the show. And, you know, you come back to the morality. All right, he could make the decision. Yeah, his eyes light up and he can climb fire escapes and feel really good. But he could also make the decision to go cold turkey like he previously suggested when he ran out. Instead, no, oh, tell me more about this. And, oh, not where I could get more. I just want to fill my databanks about this information.
Jonah seems to be certainly without some sort of smoking gun, i.e., Topher having put dad in a wheelchair, or some of the machinations, literal and metaphorical, that we'll discuss with Robert in a moment. So Jonah's not quite that level of villainy, but we do see, among other things, those two Gaborim workers kind of acting at Jonah's behest, or acting in an attempt to fulfill Jonah's vision by clocking old Robert over the head. Jonah, what's your thoughts on him and his villainy lately, Pete?
I don't see him as a villain in this episode, in that he doesn't do any of these things. Does he ask Frank to go and pick a sacrifice? He does. There's no harm there.
That's not good.
Absolutely. There's no harm there, however, because
Pete is strongly anti go get a runaway and use them for your alien rejuvenation things.
Completely. But Frank knows better and he doesn't. And that Francis and Aura, who we saw all the way back in the pilot, Matt, and they've been sprinkled here and there throughout the series to this point. But remember, they were the ones to welcome Destiny, who ultimately wound up being the fulcrum for the kids, you know, seeing their parents running away at the end of the first season and the investigation into her death that's now been framed onto to Darius. So, you know, they're not villains. They think their boss is being assaulted by this man they don't recognize, and they knock him out. But what's Jonah done in this episode? He brings his daughter to his ship at the bottom of the dig site hole, lets her meet her brother for the first time. He's expressing concern about them, about her. He's a dad trying to, you know, deal with some postmodern problems. You know, I don't see the villainy here. Again, if we look past the, oh yeah, go get me a sacrifice so I don't have flaky skin anymore.
Pete, I see Robert is on the list. I'm kind of similarly ambivalent as to his villainy here. I know to Jonah he is a threat. To the church, perhaps he's a threat. But what did old Robert do to land on this list?
Well, he jacked alien technology and is now using it on an alien. So in terms of morality, he's trying to kill somebody. He knew he was doing something that was questionable because he didn't want to tell the rest of Pride. He didn't want to tell Tina to give them that plausible deniability. And of course, it backfires on him. And another thing in Jonah's favor, Matt, he could have killed Robert. Instead, what does he do? He dumps him back with pride. Hey, this belongs to you. It's not his body. It's Robert. So I think it was very interesting, the decision not to make Jonah this mustache twirling, oh, he tried to kill me, I will kill him. I mean, I was concerned when he was bringing Robert back that it was going to be Robert's body, like one of our pride members, one of the couple's spouses was going to die, and what that could mean for story consequences. And I kind of wish they'd taken it to that level. At the same time, I do not want Robert Minoru killed off, because I really see what he talked about in himself in this episode. He is underestimated, that he was able to get close. This is a father who's trying to avenge a daughter. So again, this show remains great because they never ever paint these characters simply in black and white. Like Jonah could be completely black here in terms of his morality, and we see the good in him.
Well, Pete, let's talk theories. Let's stick with Jonah. He's been here since recorded history. And Pete, I understand the needs of story. I understand that the story needs to take place now. But couldn't he have gotten down to his ship with a pickaxe and a shovel in the last, 8,000 years just by himself? Like, Farmer Jonah, it's the year 1750. I'm going to buy this plot of land from the Spanish in California and start a digging. Like, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, would that have, in the construction of his character, would that have zapped him out? Would he have needed to sacrifice people as, he got down into the permafrost there? I mean, it's artificial story construction. I'm more concerned with the how and the why Jonah's ship crashed, Matt. Did the children of Thanos cause him to have to eject in pre-recorded history here? I think that's the most tantalizing story fruit, not this, oh yeah, was at the bottom of a hole and he's been here for however many thousands of years and couldn't take a pickaxe before they were invented. And get to the bottom of this.
So are you seriously wondering aloud as to whether this ties into the larger MCU intergalactic interstellar story?
I mean, potentially it could. We know that they've cooled a little bit on, oh, wait, the Inhumans caused him to do this. And that's why, the children of Thanos have shown up, and Loki and Asgard and all this. We know that it's not that connected, but it could be.
I think a credit to the DC shows on the WB, the Arrowverse shows, is that they do have these pre-planned crossovers. I wonder if in some sort of, future incarnation of Marvel TV, after Marvel Netflix has run its course and after the Fox purchase is done and kind of, whatever that next phase looks like, do they plan some of that stuff out better? I mean, my goodness, Pete, I'm watching this episode where the most interesting thing to happen at the bottom of the dig hole is there's a glowy person somehow underneath the ice, not ice. And I'm like, this is the best Marvel story where they've ever had to dig a hole and there's been a mystery at the bottom, because it was not great in Defenders. And it was kind of like a letdown ultimately. And maybe this would benefit from...
What if this hole, if they continue digging, brings them up in Midland Circle? Okay. Yeah. And then you could do a time differential and it would connect Hulu to Netflix, and then it could all get canceled.
Pete, a bit more seriously, nay, totally seriously here. Victor, boy, he sure loves his wife now. Is this enough for him to not be an abusive ass when he finally exits the framework at some point?
I mean, it would be flippant to say that it's Cheese Whiz that solved his problems. I don't think I can fully trust this character given his irrational, unpredictable nature, particularly where his wife is involved. And here, she's the one who's trying to save him. And yes, she's made it clear that this is a way to get her son back. But she seems genuinely happy. He seems genuinely happy. I mean, trying to find a way out of this place. But I just can't put my eggs in that basket yet.
Pete, last question from me, and I'll preface it by a little bit of an explanation to some of our international listeners, such as fan favorite Fred in the Netherlands. So Cheese Whiz, for those not in the know, is sold in Canada, Mexico, U.S., Philippines, and Venezuela. It is a processed cheese sauce which does not actually contain any cheese. That is a fact. And it is a popular option on the on cheesesteaks, particularly in Philadelphia. So, Pete, here's the question for you. Cheesesteak whiz or real cheese?
Option C, which is the purest in me and healthier all the way around. How about you eat a steak with no cheese? You get yourself some onions, some peppers, maybe some mushrooms, little bit of red sauce on there. Okay. The idea that we would drown all that nice stuff in something that's not even cheese. You want to go with provolone, which is actually an organic product, as opposed to this garbage that's made in a lab. Cheese whiz. I mean, geez, why don't you get some Velveeta out while you're at it?
I can only imagine right now Fred in the Netherlands is like, wait, I still don't understand this cheese that's not real cheese.
Wait, Eiffel texting Cheese Whiz?
Well, Pete, what theories do you have?
Hey, Matt, here's all this dirt, and there are glowing rocks in this dirt. We're just going to throw that in the back of a big truck, right? Like, no big deal. We pull up glowing rocks all the time.
In our world, maybe you could get away with, whatever, I'm just here to dig the dirt. But I mean, let's not forget, this is the MCU where there's weirdo stuff like this. You know, there's leftover Chitauri weapons in New York, and there's all this extraordinary stuff. So, of course, not only would just casual workers be curious, there's probably some sort of boring story somewhere of, like, you know, in addition to the Sokovia Accords, there's, like, new health and safety things for finding weirdo space rocks, etc. So you're absolutely right in your implied criticism.
The examination of Topher's age, Chase says that he would have been 8 when Molly's parents died 10 years ago. Obviously, that's not the case. Is there more at play other than he doesn't seem as old as he is? Is there some kind of property to the rocks? Can we expect Molly to look like she's 14 forever?
I read it, again, not knowing anything about the graphic novels, although I did pick up the first two editions, and I look forward to reading those at some point that we're maybe not podcasting Runaways every single day. But I kind of read it as just a story out, like, oh, you think that Jan Luis Castellanos is, you know, whatever, 20 or so, but he, the actor, but surprise, surprise, he's not 23. He's actually having not aged because of weirdo space rocks. I guess I expect if the show moves forward, they're not going to have a challenging story issue of, like, how do we not have Molly age while everybody else is a year older when we shoot season 3, etc.
What about this Gaborim logo, Matt, that I really took a lot of looks at in this episode? Yeah, they show us in the credits, and we'll talk a little bit about, you know, the mural, which has also been glimpsed in the title card before. But this logo, the trident, the four triangles, I really took a close look at this. And given that we have been told by Jonah, and a less than credible source, I understand, but he tells Carolina he's introduced her to her brother now, presumably his son. The four triangles, then, potentially, since Gaborim worships light, worships potentially these beings, The two tiny ones on the outside, the two big ones in the middle. We could assume the tiny ones are, you know, Jonah and Carolina, and then the big ones could be the gigantic entities in the spaceship here. Or if we just look at the trident, it would be, you know, along your Christian ideology, Father, Son, Holy Ghost here, it could be the Father, the Son, and the daughter.
I think there's tons of potential for wherever the story is headed. I'll add, you know, potentially maybe it was just a, you know, a great logo that somebody production designed and made its way through there. I know that that's a less than satisfying possibility. I just pointed out because sometimes those things do happen. I mean, think of any time that there's been extended analysis on Star Trek VI, the person hiding out in the background of when Kirk says, let them die in the room. And no, if you just look at it on the widescreen, it's a guard. There's like a guard there. It's not, you know, anybody hiding out. It's not part of a Romulan plot. It's not the Mr. Odo Klingon guy. You know, it just is a thing. So I would be interested to see how this particular theory unfolds as these remaining episodes themselves unfold.
What is Robert's status there as he is dropped off by Jonah? Why did Jonah even go to the trouble to return him?
Well, I think Jonah went to the trouble because he knew the episode needed a really great tag scene. I kid, of course. I think, if nothing else, it is kind of closing that circle in terms of Robert is out there and now he's been brought back. I was not as confident as to him being 100% alive, not as confident as you were. Now, I know which side of the bread gets buttered. I know to trust Spoiler Pete here and to say that Robert is still alive. But I think that there's a narrative expediency with which you get to say, all right, Robert is back. The naughty parents have now been confronted by Jonah in terms of, you know, their latest crazy attempt to cause trouble. And I think it just kind of adds pressure to the story and speeds things up, which is nice because 13 episodes. I know this isn't Netflix, but the history of Netflix bloat. And if nothing else, it's just like, hey, keep things rolling story-wise.
How is Topher?
What was strange is, to my eyes, following just the basic rules of TV in terms of, you know, we've mentioned in other situations, you know, one gunshot, you can live, two gunshots, that's TV code for you're dead. I know he was not shot at here, but I just felt like it was like, oh man, I'm all busted up inside. No, wait, here come the sirens. Quick, everyone, let's go. That's a lot different than like, I'm glad I could do one last thing with my dying efforts. So I'm not sold that he's dead the way certainly Molly was, and I wouldn't rule him out for some sort of surprise return.
What about this woman who creates the mural, the same one we see every episode in the opening credits? Is this another person with these abilities and enhanced, Matt? Do her eyes light up? Does she have fistigons? Does she have a staff? Can she control a dinosaur, or is she just really a good leader like Alex? Or is she also a space alien?
It was a curious piece of the story because, of course, we don't see the mural. We don't see it in its entirety until the very end. So there's this mystery of what's going on and where is it. I certainly concluded the episode feeling a little unsure. Is this meant to communicate like, oh, the story, the myth of these runaways, or the myth of Molly at the very least, like it's getting out there. It's the teens are getting all inspired by, you know, other teens avenging lowercase a the evils in Los Angeles, or is it tied to some sort of larger thing? I guess I kind of concluded being unsure, but kind of more the former in terms of, oh, word is getting out there, and not like, oh, this is the introduction of fan favorite so-and-so character from the comics.
And then Gert in the hospital here, is she really this wigged out. You know, we saw her brushing her teeth obsessively earlier in the episode. She was clearly anxious behind the wheel on the wrong side of a car in this country, Matt. something I think would rightfully make anybody anxious, particularly in the much ballyhooed about LA traffic, which not for nothing. You know, you want traffic, come to New York, New Jersey. We got real traffic, not this hyped, overhyped Hollywood traffic, please.
It's car culture because you have to drive. I was surprised to see her end up at the hospital. Further surprised to see the, you know, all right, sweetie, everything's all better now and your parents are on the way. Heck, I mean, Pete, we're talking episode 205. And if you said, oh, that's what she did in episode 210, 211. Ooh, we're starting to set up stuff in the final stretch here. But, you know, we're not even at the halfway point yet for her to, I mean, look, here are the story options for 206. One is she ducks away from the parents, which would seem kind of like a lame setup and resolution. If she then now is suddenly back, it does open up a whole bunch of interesting story problems in terms of what information can they get out of her? And, you know, is everybody else under threat? Do they have to leave the hideout? Things like that. Good story potential, but, you know, to what end? I suppose we'll see. I did kind of also feel like I understand how the story has set up A to B to C in terms of her talking about her anxiety and lack of medication in the last episode, and then that escalating here with the tooth brushing, then leading her to the end of the episode. And again, I don't want to sound insensitive to her legitimate, you know, mental state and whatnot. I kind of felt like the story didn't 100% sell me on the idea in these last two episodes of her struggle to land her at a point where she's saying, I'm going to abandon my friends. I'm going to return to my parents because I need my medicine. Am I being too harsh, Pete?
No, I don't think so. And again, clearly the moral gray area, Topher to Gert, it is very different. Although we see Gert tempted in this episode, oh, you would get me these things to take the edge off? Oh, all right. I would consider that criminal act, getting, underground pharmacy prescriptions for which a doctor has not, though she needs them, has not given them, granted them. And again, I think it's just another reason the teens and their behavior on this show is so realistically drawn, because we know they struggle with these things. We know that this stuff goes on. We know that the teen brain, as it's evolving, the different impulses in terms of what they can control and what they have a hard time, either resisting or embracing. So I think it all makes sense in the context of their age.
Well, Pete, we've been talking about the kids these days. And Pete, what do kids nowadays love more than supporting their own independent acts through places like patreon.com/fantasticgeek? It's what all the cool kids do.
Being able to support the creators that you care about is definitely something that the youth of today are into. So everybody who gets themselves over to patreon.com/fantasticgeek will see all the different levels that we allow our patrons to contribute at. We would certainly take your suggestions on all sorts of other levels. If you want us to back up a truckload of sand to your home, that you could search for Fantastic Geek paraphernalia inside it, we could make that happen.
Thanks, as always, to everyone who keeps us listener supported, particularly Pete. This being the last podcast of the year, thank you to everybody who has spent the year with us, not just listening, but helping keep the entire family of podcasts out there on the interwebs for all time. With that, Pete, are you ready to hear from Fred in the Netherlands discuss his thoughts about this stellar episode?
Always.
Hello, Matt and Pete. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for episode 5 of Runaways. Today is the 26th of December, so what we call Second Christmas Day, which is an official public holiday. I looked it up in the US, it seems to be only a public holiday in 4 states, whereas in other states, most people, of course, take a day off. In the UK, I think they call it Boxing Day. Okay, I couldn't listen to your podcast and couldn't react to that for episodes 3 and 4 because they're not out yet. So you are recording ahead and I have to keep up with you. So no reactions to your podcast of episode 3, 4 yet. It was a nice episode and I have some more or less random thoughts about it. First off is that we see reconciliation a little bit in the kids towards their parents. Carolina is addressing Leslie. Gert, I assume that she is trying to make contact with her parents, is going to hospital knowing that her parents will be informed. I think reconciliation, oh man, that word is difficult, is a theme throughout the episode because we also see Leslie and Frank get together more or less. We see that Tina and Robert also getting close, also because Robert has this big, big plan how he could get Jonah in a corner. It must be the Christmas thought. In my audio feedback for episode 3, I said, whoa, does this Nico get bossy and looking like her mother because she was getting all the kids out of their beds for combat training? And what does Molly say to Nico here?
Do you know who you sound exactly like right now? Your mom.
Which was quite devastating for her. But she does sound like her mother, and Molly is completely right about that. Will this cause a reconciliation between Nico and her mother because she realizes they are not that different? Okay, and then there is that whole Thover thing. I think his acting is too different from before, where he was nice and considerate, etc., etc. And now he's agitated, and of course people can be quite different when they are agitated, but I think this difference is as a basic kind of being is too different. I'm very worried about the relationship between Nico and Carolina because Nico is saying something about Caroline's warmth and openness and...
Oh, you're light? I don't mean like your literal light, though that's pretty cool too, but the light inside of you, that warmth, that openness, that's everything that I like about you. That's what makes you who you are.
I really wonder what will happen if Nico finds out that Carolina didn't tell her anything about her contact with Jonah. What about openness then? I think this will become quite a drama in the next, or I think in the next episode. Okay, I had many other topics to talk about, but I'm already 3.5 minutes in this feedback. I'm going to close this up and use my time for the next feedback of episode 6. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
So Pete, your thoughts there on Fred's words, are the kids starting to be a bit more like their parents in terms of how they approach the world, how they approach their daily situation?
Oh, I can completely see how Fred picks up on that. I think that Carolina's nature was noted by her father and her mother in this episode, and then, you know, capped at the end of this episode by Nico, her warmth, her openness. Yeah, it juxtaposes this behavior sneaking out, not being completely clear what she's doing, and is obviously there to set up that dramatic tension.
How about, Pete, the Nico-Carolina relationship? Is it built on a throne of lies? Is the fact that Carolina has this increasing understanding of herself something that's going to put their relationship at odds?
Oh, undoubtedly. So take the bossiness of Tina now coming through Nico and take the duplicitousness of Leslie and mix it a little bit with the aloofness of Frank. And in the writer's room wall, Matt, you have a tornado of conflict.
Ooh, I like how you brought that back full circle to the first point there. Pete, another bit of feedback here on Twitter from Woosh Danny H. That's Danny Hernandez. He says, the bright side of Hulu releasing Runaways episodes are that I binge the whole, but there is something about waiting for each episode that made last season so great. Anyways, Molly's my favorite character. She steals the show, but everyone has their moments. And this, an interesting point there, Pete, something that we've discussed before, that maybe for certain properties, fandom is better served by the one episode you discuss, you digest, you all get together on your websites, your podcasts, your social media, then you do it again for the next.
I mean, I've seen both sides. We've done both sides, but there's something about the nature, and I think they built it into this season more presciently. I'm not saying they knew as they were writing these episodes, nay, even editing them. Okay, all 13 episodes are going to come out at once. But to see Jonah and Carolina go into the hole at the end of the previous episode, and then to be able to go boom right into the next one and see what's there, you know, that's what binging is about. However, you lose the water cooler convention with being able to do this. You know, Matt, you got your start podcasting Lost, watching those week to week as I did, remembering what was going on in your life. I mean, I turned 29 the night that it aired. I will always remember watching that on my 29th birthday. My youngest sister-in-law called me to wish me a happy birthday during the scene where somebody gets sucked into the plane engine and then it blows up, and I will always watch that remembering it. I don't remember, you know, where I was when I and what was going on in my life when I watched Daredevil 209.
It's this balance between, you know, we want to have the all you can eat binging experience when it comes to TV, but does that serve a property long term? You know, Lost went 121 episodes. Are we going to see something like that again? You know, is Runaways going to run 120 episodes? No, for a variety of reasons, including just the finances of TV are different and the metrics are different. And this is serving a different property in terms of we're going to do our 10 or 13 a year, if only just to say, hey, look, Hulu subscribers, people who want this kind of show, whether it's the teen audience or the comic book audience or whatever, hey, you're good to go for this quarter, and that's it. And, you know, now, you know, in the late winter, you can see reruns of The Gifted, or they're going to have, you know, whatever it might be. So I don't know. I agree with Danny. I feel like, you know, and you and I have discussed before, Pete, how I love Game of Thrones. I came onto it late 2 years ago. My wife and I did 50 episodes in 30 days, something like that. Thoroughly loved it, thoroughly engaged, but there still is, like, you know, angry brother of the king who was Mark Addy in A Knight's Tale, and then there's nice brother who may or may not have liked Iron Fist. I really don't remember. You know, that's not the quality that that show is made out that made at. That's not the quality that most shows are made at, where you really, you know, all this work has gone into designing the Gaborum symbol, whether it's a major story point for the rest of the season or really, really thoughtful production design. This world has been made to be inhabited. Are we best served by, you know, hey, I put on an adult diaper and had some Gatorade, and you know what? I did all 13 episodes in, you know, 11 and a half hours. You know, I don't know that you're best served by that model.
I can't see the genie going back into the bottle, Matt. I really can't. We still have both models happening. So I think we have to embrace it as much as we can, be grateful for the things we can binge, be grateful for the things we can. I mean, you can live tweet things you're binging, but somebody's reading it at a different rate and then you're spoiling it for them. And, you know, it makes it confusing.
I do wonder if it's going to remain the way it is. I mean, this is all because Netflix went with this model in an effort to win the arms race, if you will, in an effort to differentiate themselves, and that they have done. you know, do we end up in a position 5 years from now where Netflix is in financial trouble? Okay, maybe. We discussed that back and forth. Do we end up in a position where just as an industry, people sit and go, you know what? A show like, you know, I don't want to denigrate anything, but a show that's like your, you know, your, we'll say Runaways, kind of your teen drama type thing. All right, those we'd rather have you crank through quickly, but, you know, whatever the next Game of Thrones is, whether it's on HBO or not, is that going to be, if it's on a streamer, is it going to be, well, you get your one a week because it's driving conversation, it's driving the portion of the audience that you want to interact with. Darn if I know, Pete, if it's a good show and it fits into the kind of sci-fi comic book realm, why don't we podcast it just the same, whether it's streaming or broadcast or cable or all at once or weekly or delivered to us in clamshells or whatever?
I mean, Disney's going to have a chance to decide which way they're going to go with it. Can they go both ways? You know, we've seen with CBS All Access, they tease out our Star Trek, and what do? They drop the second season of The Good Fight all at once after the first season dropped, you know, in a weekly model. All I know is if I get to binge the Star Wars, The Mandalorian series, that will literally happen all at once.
Well, something tells me, Pete, in 2019, that we will have an opportunity to be podcasting some new shows, one of which definitely is going to be a week to week and is not going to be released by an outlet this outlet does not drop things all at once. Another one might be. So a little mystery there for anybody who has made it to the end of this, our final podcast for 2018. Little couple of clues for what's ahead for second half of 2019.
What could it be?
What could it be indeed? Pete, with that, how can you be like Danny H? How can you be like Fred? How can people be in touch with you to talk about Runaways, to maybe share their speculation? Will you podcast this show? Will you podcast that show? Have I been able to divine enough clues left here at the end of this episode? How can they be in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKlar, KetelAar, 10,264 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com, all one word with the Fantastic Geek, the PH, you like it today. And we will be with you for the rest of 2018, 2019, and beyond.
One more bit of thanks to everybody who has been with us all year long for the most number of podcasts that we have done in an entire year. It still is stunning to think, Pete, that this is our 158th or 9th episode, depending on how you count some rerun stuff, etc. And we will see what 2019 brings. I will say, Pete, that we'll be back on Wednesday and Friday to talk more Runaways. Have to mention as well, of course, this upcoming Thursday, we will be talking the fourth and final short trek. It's a Harry Mudd episode, Pete. With that, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you, Pete, the final 2018 word.
Journey in brightness. The car was impounding.